the last time we were here at the portfolio committee, members requested more information about the ports regulator itself, the background to it, and so in addition to discussing our strat plan and ACP, I've put together a number of slides that give a suitable background, and if it is okay with you, then I will go into them in a fair amount of detail so that we are all hopefully at the end of the day reading from the same page. So just as an overview, we are saying we have a number of sections. Who is the ports regulator, about the regulator itself, the benefits of regulation in the port system and the economy, some port pricing trends that we have done global comparative studies on, and then we will go into the performance part itself. So I think without much further ado, just the background of the National Ports Act, on page 3 we are on, for those who are following on the printed copy. The sea transport is an essential vehicle of international trade, and for us approximately 80% of our trade being by sea, the efficient ports are a catalyst for trade growth. The Ports Act itself was established with the purpose of ensuring affordable, internationally competitive, efficient and safe port services based on a transparent and cost-effective nature that's economically and environmentally sustainable. The Act contains mandates and functions of the Ports Regulator as well as the National Ports Authority. It sets out the powers of the Ministers of Transport and Public Enterprises as regards ports. It sets out an overall governance framework for the port system, and it was enacted on 26 November 2005. Essentially, the structure is, you know, Parliament passes the Act, regulations are issued by Minister of Transport, directives are issued by the Ports Regulator, and rules around ports are issued by the NPA itself, National Ports Authority. I must just say these days it is called the TNPA, but it is the sort of trading name. But in the Act itself, it is the National Ports Authority. And so we refer to it as the NPA, yeah, not to be confused with the Prosecuting Authority. Okay, so the objects of the National Ports Act, basically there are a number of them. I've just summarized them into a few. The development of an effective and productive ports industry for economic growth and development, promote and improve efficiency and performance in the management and operations of ports, promote the development of an integrated regional production and distribution system in support of government policies. I'm keeping in mind what the Honorable Chair said about Operation Pakisa. So once these become government policies, it's important that we will also be looking at those. The institutional structure on page 5, so it's the DOT is the overarching thing. It envisages within the Act a number of different institutions. The National Ports Consultative Committee and the PCCs, Port Consultative Committees for each port that looks at planning, strategy, performance, port-specific issues. It has then the right at the bottom of the page, the National Ports Authority, which is the port infrastructure landlord and provides marine services, and the Ports Regulator is another entity envisaged within the Act, which has been given effect to. So essentially, the people that report to the PCCs and the NPCC are TPT as well as private ports operations, as well as private port services, as well as ourselves as regulator has an observer role within that. The NPA, of course, is a central part of that. However, the NPA falls under DPE as a shareholder. Ourselves as an entity, we fall under the DOT. All of that is part of the Act as well. On the next page, you get the sort of architecture of, as I discussed earlier on, the Act and regulations come, Parliament and Ministry, Port Regulator issues directives that sets processes and content articulation for the regulator in hearings, in monitoring, and in economic regulation. On the other hand, the NPA sets ports rules, processes for participation in ports, and establishes safety regulation and port control. So we come to the question, who is the ports regulator? We are set up in Chapter 5 of the Act. Ourselves here, myself and Trevor Zani, although I am a member of the ports regulator, as he is part of the secretariat. So the members are the regulator. So remember, this is not a board in the normal sense of a board. It is not only a governance board. It also participates in terms of hearings, etc., etc. And it is therefore not called a board in the Act. It is called the regulator. And they are not board members. It is a board. It is a member of the regulator. So it consists of 9 members. Currently there are 6 that constitute the economic regulatory authority for the port system in South Africa. They are independent in the performance of the economic regulation and tribunal functions from the department itself. So we don't have to, as a regulator, get the approval of the minister in terms of tribunal hearings, in terms of tariffs set, etc. So it is an independent function by the regulator. So of course we are one of the key institutions envisaged by the port policy. There is a secretariat which I head, although I'm also an official member of the regulator. As CEO, I'm accounting officer and head the secretariat of the regulator that assists the regulator. Next one is the functions of the ports regulator in terms of the Ports Act. We exercise economic regulation of the port system in line with government strategic objectives. We promote equity of access to port facilities and services provided in ports. Monitor the activities of the National Port Authority to ensure compliance with the Act. Adjudicate complaints and appeals against the authority, the National Port Authority. Approve or reject the authority's tariffs. Promote regulated competition. Regulate the provision of adequate, affordable, and efficient port services and facilities. Next slide. What is the purpose of equity of access to port facilities and services? About the movement of goods for the import and export markets, as well as domestic and regional distribution, access by SMMEs, BBBE, and women-led companies, improving international trade, prevention of access arbitrage in vertically integrated port participants, promote efficiency and reliability of port services and facilities. In terms of competition in the port system, in page 10, the Ports Act requires the regulator to promote regulated competition. The port system must be locally, regionally, and globally competitive. The port user must have a choice in facilities and services. So with that in mind, we have, as part of our program structure, an industry development program, page 11, which looks at the equity of access to port facilities and services, competition in the port system, economic participation, infrastructure and planning, port infrastructure efficiency monitoring, promotion of participation of women, BBBE, etc. We then go to page 12. We also have a legal program within our structure, a legal section. There's a compliance project. We're reviewing all Section 56 agreements and licenses, reviewing lease agreements, review of BBBE compliance of the NPA. So that's where we've got to at this stage. They also deal with complaints and appeals tribunals. Here, appeals on the decisions of the NPA and complaints about the NPA in terms of the Act and directives. For example, some of the finalized matters include the Kunenlachel record of decision issued earlier this year, previously the Columbus stainless steel issue, the General Motors South Africa record of decision, you will find that all the records of decisions we've issued on complaints and tribunals hearings are on our website. So it's a very public sort of entity. Everything that we do and finish ends up on our website. You'll find all the details there. Then we have, of course, an economic regulation program. And essentially, regulation then, from an economic sense, is a balancing act between the users of port and service providers of infrastructure. So it is between what is in the interest of the NTA as well as what is in the interest of port users. It provides protection in the cases of monopoly pricing. Of course, geographic location makes ports very easily a natural monopoly, so it protects the public against monopoly pricing. We must ensure openness, transparency, and due process. Minimum service standards usually protects the public interest, but also that of the infrastructure owner. Essentially, for a country, it reduces risk both for the infrastructure owners as well as the users through rules and guidelines. Okay, page 14, what is the regulator's role in NPA tariffs? To ensure that the NPA tariffs are utilized in ensuring that the port system is efficient, to ensure that the tariffs are affordable to port users, to ensure that the tariffs are predictable and non-discriminatory, and to prevent the utilization of tariffs for cross-subsidization unless this is in the public interest. Now, these are all from within the Act. So the purpose of the NPA tariff, on the other hand, for the NPA itself, is for the NPA to enable them to recover their investment in owning, controlling, and administering ports, and its investment in port services and facilities, such as pilotage, tugboats, all of those things become part of the port service they provide, besides the quay walls, the turning basins, etc., which are all part of the infrastructure. To recover its costs in maintaining, operating, controlling, and administering ports, and its costs in providing port services and facilities. And lastly, to make a profit that's commensurate with their risk as a company involved in port services and facilities. What is the process of assessment of authorities' tariffs? So in terms of the Act, the NPA submits proposed tariffs to the regulator. Tariffs cover all NPA activities as the authority. The tariff application is published for comments, so we publish it on our website. The regulator then holds hearings and invites submissions on the proposed tariff increases. Now, after the consideration of these submissions, the regulator can approve or reject some or all of the tariff increases that are applied for. And the elements of the proposed tariff is the calculation and the model, all financial information and valuations, reinvestment of profits and revenues, impact on port activity cost structures. So the economic regulation program, in summary, is part of the regulator, is primarily responsible for the tariff setting process, the assessment of tariff application and public submissions, developing tariff methodology, tariff book restructuring, looking at tariff incidents for different cargo dues and different categories of tariff. And the other thing that this section of the program does is to do research work on port pricing, on cargo traffic flows, etc. Okay, so how does the port regulator contribute to the country's development objectives? Although the regulator does not have a direct mandate to implement projects itself, its decisions on the NPA's tariff have significant implications on the port sector, the economy, and the ability of stakeholders to implement projects. Since the inception inception of the regulator in 2009 to date, we've been in a position to smooth the tariffs, and as well as the tariff decisions have translated into direct saving to users of ports, of our ports, of about 5 billion over the period, 5 billion rand. So I think that takes us to the next slide, 19, of economic impact of the regulator. So since its inception in 2009 to date, there has been the smoothing of the tariffs, as we said. The tariff decision has translated to about a saving of 5.2 billion over the period. We've been able to rationalize tariffs, so the 1 billion rand rebate that we agreed to, we've significantly lowered approved tariffs, but at the same time we've continued the sustainability of the National Ports Authority. So we've been proactive in risk mitigation. We have, as part of the facility, an excessive tariff increase margin credit. At the moment, there's 2.5 billion rand available to offset future high spikes or increases that are going to be high. Looking forward, we're trying to establish fair tariff incidents and more accurate investment signals. All right, we'll expand on that just now. So, and on the next page, we just have a graph on page 20 showing the applied return on the asset base that the NPA has applied for, and that is the gray bar graph. So some fairly high increases in each of the years. The regulator has been able to reduce this in each of the years, and that's shown by the sort of squiggly blue line of the lowered returns. The next graph then gives you some idea of the revenue. So the first graph was on returns. The second one is on overall revenue applied for versus what was allowed by the regulator. So you can see, while it started in 2009-10, as you know, it was just the initial one was just accepted as it was, but in each of the following years, we were able to reduce the revenue without the NPA itself suffering any adverse conditions. And then you see towards the later 2 years a more stable situation. So we're moving towards stabilization of tariffs. Okay, the essential part of this is called the regulatory manual, and this outlines the mandate of the Ports Regulator of South Africa. The framework governing the National Ports Authority's tariff setting process and matters relating to compliance of the NPA with the regulatory framework. So we've done a second version, well, the second version of the manual now that we have. Previously it used to be an interim one-year manual. In this year we finalized the 2015-16 to 2017-18 for the first time a multi-year tariff manual and a tariff methodology that spans 3 years. So that gives a bit more stability in pricing and a better outlook to the industry to prepare for which for tariff increases in a more predictable way. So let's look at the multi-year methodology that we have now developed and published in July this year. It's on page 23. So it allows for an annual review. Although it's a three-year methodology, it allows for annual review and annual adjustments of tariffs. So there's no fixing of tariffs for the period in order to protect users from possible large step changes in the tariff if it was done, if it was only reviewed after 3 years. This is because there are large variations in the users and usage of port infrastructure and services. So you want any adjustment in tariff to be able to accrue to the appropriate people at the appropriate time. The annual review allows adjustments in prices to be more efficiently and appropriately allocated to users. The multi-year methodology seeks to lower regulatory uncertainty. It will lower the difference between what is requested by the NPA and subsequently granted by the regulator. It assists stakeholders in formulating responses to the NPA tariff application in a manner that will assist the regulator in its decision making. Lastly, on page 24 on these issues, the tariff application process is guided by the Act and the directives. The regulator's assessment, basically we assess the NPA application. The assessment takes into account all public comments and allows also for the regulator itself to make its own assessment, being the members. A record of decision then is issued. So that record of decision will be fixed for the 2015-16 tariff year. It's part of the process. We're busy at the moment. And we'll also publish indicative tariffs for the 2016-17 and 18 years, tariff years. Specific tariff changes may be requested by the NPA, and the tariff strategy is another part of what we're working on. And that will be based on a public engagement process that will start to influence tariffs from 2016-17. So the tariff strategy will then look at not just the size of the cake, but how it is carved up, which port users, which port categories will pay the more appropriate prices. Okay, so that takes us to the next sort of section, which is, looks at port pricing trends from the global port pricing comparative study that we've done. I think the first page just gives the results, and then we follow on through a number of graphs which we'll go through reasonably quickly, so don't let the bulk of it worry you, but essentially it compares South African pricing and pricing structures to those around the world. So other ports around the world are compared on a standardized ship, standardized cargo basis. So this current study that we published this year is the second iteration of the study, and so we have got now two different studies to look at where we are going to as a country then. We realize that there's no real relative system level structure change despite large decreases in container cargo dues as well as export automotives in terms of our ROD 2013-14. There is still significant cross-subsidization from cargo owners towards primary exporters and vessel owners. So just to give you a snapshot of that, of course the full study is published on our website for those people who are interested in going into the details itself on the methodology of the study, etc., and the details of it. We've just picked up some snapshots of graphs. So page 27, for example, you can see the first two gray lines are our local ports, Durban, Cape Town, then followed by a number of ports around the world, Valencia, Port Louis, Valparaiso, Colombia, etc. The line across gives you the average from the sample that has been chosen, and it seems like our Durban and Cape Town is far more expensive than or is above the average and compared to other countries in terms of container tariffs. The next page quickly just says that all vessels face much lower overall costs in South African ports. So the vessel charges seem to be cheaper, ranging from 32% below the global norm in case of containers and 75% in the case of iron ore. So the graph on page 29 gives you an idea of that. So if you take from the average, we are below the line in coal, below the line on the iron ore vessel cost, below the line on the container as well as automotive, and these relate only to vessel costs as a component. The next page talks about the Ro-Ro tariffs, and we can see, well, I think we didn't use the gray line there, but Durban is the first line, and you can see how much above the sort of sample global average it is, even after discount, because you'll find another gray line, I think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, even with a discount we are above the average. Now Ro-Ro tariffs of course refer to roll-on, roll-off ships where vehicles are transported, so they roll the vehicles on and roll them off. the graph on page 31 gives you a sense then of which are the subsidized and who are the subsidizers in terms of our port system. So it seems like containers and automotives are actually cross-subsidizing our pricing on coal and iron ore. And so if you recall, part of our function is to look at subsidies, cross-subsidies within the system. So we're beginning to do that by these kinds of studies. So the graph on page 32 shows you then the Richards Bay coal, which is the gray line way below towards the end, and then the Saldanha Bay on the iron ore is also the gray line there. And so those prices are well below global average. Transshipment on the next page, page 33, also shows that we are below the world average on transshipment charges. And then the last graph there on page 34 looks at port operations, which is essentially done by TPT, and this is the TPT prices remain high compared to the global averages. So page 35, we say, what can we take from this? There are high levels of cross-subsidization in the port system, and they remain a concern. The regulator has started to adjust the tariff book with the parameters of the revenue required methodology that we use in the tariff setting processes. This has started to bring about some normalization, but more is required. The issue of free on board and cost insurance rate, so FOB export and CIF import predominance means that as a country we lose out both sides. So when we're exporting we lose, and when we're importing we lose as well compared. So this is the terms of trade in the world at the moment. I think we've covered most of those already in the discussion. So what I'll do is then move on to our annual performance. And just before that, I do have a slide just showing you the program areas. The first one is the administration program. It's still program one, like in government in general. Program two is economic regulation. Program three is industry development. Program four and five is our legal section, which looks at compliance as well as the appeals and tribunals. So I think just moving on to the APP. So this is a 2014-15 half-year report on the APP. We'll look at basically the KPI indicators as well as the half-year status. So in terms of the administration, KPI first one, full funded posts. Half-year status, all funded posts have been filled. Next one, skills development and training, HR and HR strategy developed and implemented for the period. So we've got the skills development approved and implemented, and the HR strategy in draft will be approved in the fourth quarter. The next one, to review staff benefits and improve on these where necessary and suitable for the organization. All staff benefits have been reviewed and approved. Okay, the organizational performance scorecard is to be reported on quarterly. We have actually all quarterly reports submitted for each quarter timely. Staff performance management system implemented with performance contracts in place for each staff member. All staff performance plans are in place, have been in place by the end of the first quarter, and the half-year review of all employees have also been completed. The next one, data analysis software procured and fully implemented. We have procured the software and implemented it. The document management system procured and implemented. This has also been procured and implemented. Okay, the The next one says first phase data management software and hardware procured and implemented. That has been done. Tribunal case management system procured and implemented. This has also been done. The IT governance framework to be drafted and implemented. I think here we start running into some problems. Our IT governance framework is still in draft and will be approved in the fourth quarter. The items in the next one, the BCP and the DRP, the Business Continuity Plan and the Disaster Recovery Plan, to form part of the IT governance framework actually have been drafted. So sections of this have been drafted, and by the fourth quarter we will have this in place. So the next one is Business Continuity and Disaster Recovery Plan drafted and implemented. This is BCP and DRP. They have been drafted but not yet approved. So the approval will happen in the fourth quarter. The next one, 75% of discretionary procurement must be from BBBE in accordance with the scoring in the regulatory framework. I think here 20% was procured, so here we need to pick up as well. By the end of the last financial year, we ended up with over 90%, so I think this one will be picked up. The next one, the KPI indicator, is financial policies not having formed part of the finance review to be drafted, approved, and implemented. Policies have been approved and implemented. Quarterly reports to be sent to the executive authority on time and on budget. Quarterly reports have been submitted at the end of each quarter. Compliance with the PFMA in terms of time periods for submission of budgets and financial reports, all requirements of the entity have been complied with in this regard. Effective risk management, the risk register, risk assessment was performed and a risk register is in place. We still have to do a risk strategy to be drafted in line with the risk register, and that will be done by the third quarter. Okay, the next one says engage Department of Transport and the Treasury to evaluate ways to supplement the regulator's funding to ensure sustainability. We have submitted a funding proposal to the Department of Transport and presented the proposal in the AGM held on 26th September. The Minister has requested a meeting during the AGM to actually discuss the funding proposal, and this will happen in November. I think we're on page 42. Now this is the economic regulation part. The KPI indicator there was the methodology, decision, and publication. So the tariff methodology, remember I said to you now we have for the first time a three-year methodology, was implemented and presented to the regulator roadshows during the quarter. The fourth regulator received an application in line with the methodology from the NPA. Roadshows were used to engage with and provide clarification to port users and stakeholders on the multi-year methodology, its components on effective infrastructure delivery in the port system. Okay, so that was done. The medium to long-term tariff strategy to be developed and approved by the accounting authority and consulted with the executive authority. At the moment, we are making progress on this. We have not completed it yet. So we have been consulting with the National Ports Authority and a working arrangement to address differences or areas identified for further development has been put in place. Industry has not yet been consulted due to the ongoing work and consultation with NPA. So this is in the process of drafting. We envisage by the end of the financial year we would be completed with that. So fourth quarter, I would think, is when we will finish this. The tariff decision and the record of decision publication. The application is received and assessment of the application has commenced. And these roadshows were held in September So the decision on the tariff amendment is planned for the middle of February 2015. Page 43. Okay, the indicator there says long-term integrated tariff approach agreed with the DOT. So we have been having engagements with the working group on the legislative components of the STIR bill, STIR being the Transport Economic Regulator. This has also been covered in the funding proposal to the minister. Okay, the next one says 31st March 2015, the global port pricing comparator completed for 5 cargo or commodity types. Essentially, two-thirds of the total project has now been completed and will be finished ahead of schedule. Liquid bulk has been added to the report, and the third annual update of the previous two only covered 4 commodities. So now we are actually doing an update on the global comparator, the graphs that I've showed to you, and so we are two-thirds on the finished on that. The next one says complete traffic statistics review for liquid bulk and thereafter upscale. So we have currently 106,000 data lines that has been received from SARS. Data has been received from the National Ports Authority as well. However, there are some discrepancies with the data that are being addressed through consultation. So the scope of the research report has significantly increased from the previous year and includes all the bulk and break bulk commodities in addition to liquid bulk. So that's one area we are running into some problems. I think we'll get around these. It's just a lot of work, lots of data to analyze and very few stuff. Okay, the next one says provide support required by DOT in the industry at PCC meetings as well as the NPCC meetings. Our industry development section has been doing this, so we supported the DOT's National Port Consultative Committee process through which port users access across all the ports make inputs into the National Ports Authority's capital program and monitor port performance. We have also engaged in a tariff methodology clarification workshop for the NPCC. This advises the Minister of Transport on, amongst others, the measures that need to be taken to improve the regulatory framework governing management and operations of ports and alterations to the authority's tariffs. So, yes, I think the short answer is we have actually provided the support, but people felt that you might want more detail. Okay, the next one talks about the medium-term port benchmarking review. It's supposed to perform the review by March 2015, full port benchmarking review on marine terminal infrastructure services with a shared efficiency research component. So the second quarter target there has not been achieved due to timing challenges in accessing data from the NPA. Data requests to the NPA for information will be received by the end of October, and so that would have started now. We did have a meeting towards the end of October with the NPA on their TOPS program, and so the data there has now been sent. Okay, the next one says start review and engage NPA for capacity and utilization data. Data reflecting the design and installed capacity in all NPA terminals, throughput, and terminal characteristics sourced from the NPA's port planning and own analysis and assessment of port capacity and utilization has commenced. So, yes, we have started the review. The last one on that page, asset valuation project to be commenced and results published. We've realized now that the target is not achievable in terms of the resources we've had. We have put out bids for companies to perform asset valuation on 10 key assets of the NPA. The bids, the sort of bids that are competent have come in at a level above our entire reserve as an organization, and so we are unable to do this without more funding. So what we're saying there, the target is not achievable, the process to be terminated and additional processes to be investigated, budgetary constraints, proposal for donor funding has been submitted to National Treasury. So I have asked National Treasury's IDC section to look at the potential for donor funding for us so that we can value the assets, the assets of the NPA. Their return as the NPA depends on the value of the assets, and if we leave this for too long, it's going to become a problem because we may be giving out more profits than are necessary because the valuation of the assets is the valuation that they are providing to us at this point. We want to be able to independently verify this. Page 45, various provisions of the Ports Act are outdated, and additional provisions are to be added in line with the shortcomings identified by the regulator. So it says the half-year status of the draft report on which sections are to be amended has been completed. Internal consultation has commenced to identify additional challenges, and a draft will be submitted to the regulator at its next meeting. Coming to the compliance aspects, the complete 100% of the compliance review of Durban and Richards Bay and commence with other ports. These are compliance in terms of contracts. And so we've analyzed Richards Bay, all 124 licenses and agreements have been reviewed. We are awaiting the lease agreements for from the NPA itself to start reviewing them. There's, I think, over 500 lease agreements that we need to still look at. The next one says commence review of East London, P, Mucha, Saldanha, and Mossel Bay. So we've compliance work plan to be drafted and approved. We have a draft plan and we are awaiting engagement with the NPA on that. Page 46. With regards to the triple BEE compliance review of all Section 56 and 57 port facilities and service providers for the ports, Richards Bay and Durban triple BEE status review to be completed. We have actually agreed with a format for reporting with the NPA, and the annual report is due on 26 November. We've engaged with the NPA and Industry SASOA on the new triple BEE code, so we've had a meeting recently on that and the scorecard. Currently, the sense is that the NPA does exceed the threshold of 75%. Approximately 86% has been achieved, but we do still need to do the full assessment. The next part of that was to commence East London PE and all the other ports. The work plan for that is in place. We need to request the documents from the NPA to start reviewing this. Next item, revised directives published for comment. The project here is delayed due to time constraints, but of course it's basically capacity that we need more people to be able to do these things, or all of the things that we wish to achieve. The last one on that page, the legislative framework to be developed, implemented, and updated annually, ensure good governance in compliance with the King Code, CFMA, etc. We have actually developed this. Page 47, which I think is the sort of last page of the APP strat plan. Regulator members to receive ongoing training on judicial processes. A submission has been put on my desk. We are trying to get a university to allow a university-issued certificate so that when the members receive training, we know that it is adequately passed by the university itself. So we've had had a few challenges with that, to find the appropriate people to give the kind of training on judicial processes, because it is a quasi-judicial organization that we are dealing with, and so this is an important part. But I suspect by the end of the year we'll actually have this in place, and members would have undergone judicial training on processes. Draft and finalized submission for additional commissioners to assist members on tribunal matters. This was initially set as a target, but I don't know, the Act actually doesn't allow us to actually appoint commissioners. So what we've done is we've asked the ministry to, we requested the minister to increase the number of board members, because it is the board members that sit on tribunal matters and complaints hearings, etc. So if we can get the full complement of 12 members, it will facilitate a more rapid resolution of judicial tribunal matters. Okay, so I think the very last one, tribunals to have at least 18 days availability in the year. So timely selection and availability of members for approximately 3 days per matter, estimated at 6 matters per year to be heard. We did actually finalize 5 matters within the first half of the year, and it's anticipated that the 3 more matters will be finalized by the financial year, which will be in excess of the actual target. So I think the last section is financial management, and my acting CFO will deal with this.
I'm going to go straight to slide 14, dealing with the MTF budget. So this slide here, we did present a week or two ago in the portfolio to present our annual report. As can be seen, we are more of a labor-intensive organization. If you see that the table below, committed employees, public services, and depreciation. One thing I want to highlight to the members here is, as you see there, we don't have capital expenditure from the post, because in terms of operations, we more of rendering services, being the economists on economic regulation side and the lawyers in the tribunal administration section. And also, in those figures, you see the committed employees. That is a figure for the current staff that you did mention, that we only have about 17 employees in total. And that figure there is for compensation for the next 3 years. We don't have any plans appointments yet up until we get approval for additional funding, because the challenge we have is we need to be able to appoint more people in terms of economic regulation and legal side of it. But the challenge that we face a lot is when we try to attract the talent, many of them are employed by the private sector, and the compensation that they require them would be probably about 300,000 or 400,000 more than you have on the budget. So as a result, what we've done is we've done a salary benchmarking exercise, so we compare our own salaries to those of the market, and then the last exercise there is to take those results and equate them into the government position, so that when we come to a more informed decision to say how much can we be able to pay for those core functions. And also, if you look at the table above, the one where it says the program, you will see that there's more on administration budget, because at the moment we don't have a lot of people in the core functions, being income regulation and tribunals, and we hope that with the portfolio can assist us to secure more funding, we can reach upon more people. But obviously, let us recover with amendments to the Act so that we can be able to deliver more on our mandates. And if we move into the next slide, which is number 50, it sort of shows the income and expenditure for the second quarter compared to the budget. If we look at the first part on revenue, we mainly rely on transfers from the COT, which in total so far we received 8.4 million. And then in terms of regulations, we're required to invest our surplus funds to try and gain some interest there.
that's how much we received at 151. Now, with regards to fund income, what happened there is we've got some refunds. What happened in May, we had unfortunately, there's one of our common income was stolen, so the insurance company paid us there. And then going down to the expenses, under compensated employees, there was under expenditure of 403, reason being, most of the appointments were made this year. They were made towards the end of the second quarter. Reason being that the appointment processes we were delayed because we were trying to get people who can be able to fill those posts. And those posts were in the industry development section as well as communication section. So it we spent more time trying to get more people because there's no point just making an appointment for the sake of filling a position where we need to spend more time training that person in order to successfully do that task. And also for goods and services, we have overspent materially there because one, there's been a certain traveling overseas based on operational requirements, that being FNC and also remuneration to the regulator members. Because obviously when they travel, must pay for those fees, also come up with stuff that goes with them, all those interventions. So as at the end of the second quarter there, we had a surplus of S51. But I want to bring the attention of the members that as much as it shows that by the end of the second quarter, we had S51. The way in which the budget is looking now for the next 6 months, we have a possibility of running into a deficit because the planned activity going forward indicates that what we have available in terms of currency allocation will not be enough for the next 6 months in order to pay all the expenses. So there might be a chance that we may have to go to the reserves and spend some money from there. And it basically takes care of the budget. But what I want to also bring to attention again of the members is, in terms of one of the items that they all spoke about, which is the funding proposal, the primary aim there is currently we are mainly funded by transfer from DOC, which is only in the region of 60 million rand. And for us to function properly, we need to fill a full organogram, which is the 229 employees, compared against the 17 that we have. And if we can get approval to implement this funding proposal, we'll be able to at least generate an amount in the region of about 28 billion rand, which we can only just be able to charge from the industry, which is paid straight to the regulator. And if that can be the case, then we'll take away pressure on the fiscal, where the DOT will not have to transfer any funds from to us, which has been mainly funded by the industry. So that will give up in terms of the fiscal there. And then also we will need assistance to amend the act where we can give in more strength or more teeth in terms of, for example, the funding proposal is not on the act, so it must be in the act in order to be able to be implemented. Two, we need more regulator members in terms of the tribunals because at the moment we've got a backlog of tribunals and we need to check out that backlog. We did mention that to the minister when we had the HM in September that at the moment, the current members, their term of office expires in May next year. So again, really a process where they can start as early as possible to appoint more members. So come May, we want to challenge where we sit in the entity, but without the board members, or should I say regulatory members. So that's basically the main assistance we need from the portfolio committee going forward in order to be able to discharge our mandates from the national process.
Thank you very much, honorable members. There we are. Let's go into discussions and the people out of the report. On behalf of the members, I would like to profusely apologize that we started the meeting before the honorable Mulaudzi and honorable Matlakan arrived. And this is a message that comes from the honorable members that they apologize for having done that because they couldn't wait any longer. We all came out, it's raining in Cape Town, but we made sure that we are here on time. So I think that apology is accepted. Honorable members, let's entertain the report. I'll take the hand of Honorable Humsinga, the hand of Honorable Sibande, Defreitas, Hadere, Preko, Honorable Mlaudi, lastly, Honorable Ramatlaka. Okay. I know you will be, where they will be speaking. I normally know that the African way of doing things in advance, I know that you're going to apologize. So the African way of doing things doesn't arise in this committee. We stick to the actual time chronologically, not the African time. Yeah. In essence, he says he will arrive around 9:30. It may mean anything after 9:30. Around 9:30, that's in essence. So we will have to talk.
I would like to ask some questions on the study that was done, specifically in looking on your slide number 27, the container tariffs, where it was a pricing comparison on the container tariffs, and where it is indicated that Durban and Cape Town is the most expensive in comparison to a couple of other international harbors. And then, most concerning, the average is used as a benchmark. Something I'm a bit unsure of whether in using an average, whether that can really relate to some sort of benchmark. Now, my question is, to what extent does this also reflect and is influenced by volumes? What is the actual costing and the actual specific unit cost that is really, you know, what is the attempt to indicate here? Because if I look at slide number 33, where again we have a comparison of transshipment below global averages, suddenly here are 9 other harbors of which costing is also then indicated, of which 80% is below average, which then pulls Durban and Cape Town below average, which sends out a total different message. So very conveniently, not the same parameters are used in indicating, you know, what our costing and tariff structures really are. So certainly there must be some consistency in the number of harbors that are used in comparisons to Cape Town and Durban, and it must be a constant. And then lastly, you know, I'm very suspicious when average is used as a benchmark. Certainly average is a standard, but we can't use average as a benchmark. A comment and then a question around that.
Let's take it along that yourself, Honorable Dictator.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. If you could just, on your slide 14, page 14, you talk about to ensure the tariffs are affordable to port users. I'd like you to unpack that a little bit more, because by your own admission, we're a very expensive port. And we're losing a lot of business to Maputo, for example, a lot of other neighboring ports, when logically we should be at the hub for ports because of our positioning and so forth. So if you could talk about that. But I'd also like for you to talk about, and on the same page by the way, you also talk about cross-nationalization and so forth. You could talk that as well. But have you, I mean, the reason why we're so expensive is because we're inefficient. That's the real problem. And then what we then make even worse by making it expensive. So it's a complete deterrent from anybody who'd want to come to port. So the ports that are used, our ports that are used by people out of desperation that have, for whatever reason, no other option but to use our ports. So what, you know, what is your relationship? I know that you're just the regulator. But what is your relationship with trying to talk to port authorities about trying to change the whole culture in this regard? And is there any way you can influence it? Then on, that covers that, so I just want to have a look at the other one, and that is, yeah, you also talked here about, on your page 35, to adjust the tariff book with parameters of the revenue required methodology applied in the tariff setting process. If you can just tell us what that means, because it's a lot of words that doesn't mean anything. So you could, I suspect I understand what I think. I don't know what you're trying to say. You can unpack us on that. But my biggest gripe, Jay, is the fact that our ports are absolutely completely inefficient and unreliable, and everything else that goes with it. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Jay. The must appreciate the report that has been tabled by the Port Authority. Probably my question will be similar to what our members have asked. But mine also is try to understand the dominance within the cargo owners. I know that in my previous life, other users of the ports, they were complaining that people that are dominating, who are the owners or people who are renting out those cargoes, are in actual sense, there's no inroad whereby the historical disadvantaged people are being accommodated. As a result, they can't be able to go and operate there. If maybe can be able to enlighten us to say whether is that thing still going on, what is happening, and as a port regulator, do you think you can be able to do something about it in assisting the historical and disadvantaged communities in terms of them operating within those port regulators? Because the major issue that was raised, the issue that made this thing to be more expensive, they are made to be more expensive because the historical disadvantaged people want to go and enter into that territory to operate there. But they are being blocked because the owners there, they are colliding in raising the prices, in making sure that whosoever that wants to rent the space becomes expensive and becomes difficult for one to operate within that. If you can be able to clarify in terms of that one, because the thing that they also given me a lot of trouble. I understood what you were trying to request the portfolio committee to assist you with. But if you can be able to probably explain deeper in terms of what kind of regulations that you want the portfolio committee to assist you with. Because if you want to have more teeth, it's fine, you can put more false teeth, but what exactly do you want? Because you must be able to understand. So that ourselves, we must assume and decide on your behalf, so that you can be able to give you those kind of teeth that you want to bite. Because I know most of the regulators, they have a challenge because of limitations of the regulations. Tell us how far can we give you, so that you can be able to. Because the other thing that you don't want to do is to give you powers so that you go encroaching other people's territory. We don't want to do that. Why don't you give you more powers to operate within your ambit, so that at least you can be able to implement the your strategic plan. I understood you properly, CFO, but please, I'll take this one. You want us to increase what the organogram so that you can be able to fill up all the positions so that you can be able to deliver for your operations. And if I understood you clearly, said if that organogram can be able to be fulfilled and be able to operate within that, you can be able to deliver, and you put a flag in the fiscal budget. If that's the case, how will the addition of the tribunal members assist in that regard? Because I think those are two different things. If in my little bit of understanding, but you clarify for me, because I need to understand the issue of filling up the organogram and the adding of the tribunal members, because tribunal members said you must be able to add up in terms of your board so that they can be able to deal properly with these issues. Because the question that we as members we have is that in most of these boards they're being expanded for nothing. People are there. When you look at the operation, most of the money gets spent in paying board members. But in terms of the operation, there's no difference. If ours is to expand your organogram, it will put a slack in the fiscus. I agree with you. Then we must be able to find space how to assist you in terms of doing that. But if adding more members of boards won't be able to make any difference, you will still be dependent on the fiscus. Well, still a challenge. It doesn't make any difference. But I need you to be, you know, just clarify for me in those two comparisons how it's going to assist you and what guarantee are you giving us as a portfolio committee that we agree you add both of these board members and the staff, you continue to operate. Once I see you knocking in the treasurer's office, then you will find me with a shambok, because that means you will have misled us. That's what I don't answer to. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation and also thank the delegation for responding to our invitation. I also thank Honorable Hadebe for echoing my concern about the board issue, because I had a concern around that the organization is having a 17 staff component. What is it that makes them to recommend additional board members? Because they are saying the ideal situation is 12 member board. What is it that makes them to make that recommendation? I was also having confusion around the issue of the working of the board, because even last time when they were here, I don't think there was any board member. Even now, there is no board member. I was to ask, whom are they reporting to? Who is overseeing their function? Yes, where are they? There's also on slide 11 where there's a say around industry development program. The last point there where you say promotion of participation of women. What about in the next financial year also include youth there and other interest groups in the next financial year? I also have a question on page 40. Page 40, where you on your APP strategy plan, page 40, you talk of discretionary procurement. My question is there transparency around that? Is there use of different service providers? Is there value for money when you use that discretionary procurement? My other take would be around holders, so that you are able to add those that you may forget. I think the other question, Honorable Hadebe, did cover it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, allow me to start maybe thanking them to come and present, also to echo my sentiments about the board members, which are not there. But even there, if they are 17, you see, what is worrying me, the Constitution, who constitute you, I mean your team, in page 7, you said it consists about 9 members, currently 6. See, that's where I've got a problem. Because with that, I will ask this question about the capacity of your capacity. And then you see, Chairperson, there is a thing which normally is used by certain entities and sections in the government that reduce the staff so that we can use consultants, or so that we increase board members. The question is going to take with the relationship with the board members. So it's worrying me, because they depend solely on consultants. And then also to ask the your relationship with other provinces. You see, if like my understanding, with little understanding, you must have relationship in terms of cargo, because some of these people, they are related with the, you see, with ports, because of cargo which is being transported, because the cargo, some of the cargo, is starting there in some provinces, going there in the port, so that it can be taken as some container, with its form of containers. So what is your relationship with them? And because I doubt the strength, as I indicated, about the capacity. And you see, on page 10, what is worrying me there, maybe if you can take us on board, about the competition system. Okay, let me leave that one. I'll come back because it will be covered somewhere. Let's go to page 24. I don't want to go out. I want you to dwell much about your own presentation. You see, with that one, who determines the tariffs? Is it the regulator or is it the NPA? Because that question is, that one was nearly following up, that one was asked by one of the members, Mzinga. And then I'll come to page 44 and 46. You see, honorable members, with me, which page 44 and 46, they are linked, I've got a couple pages. You see, if you look on your own presentation about the port capacity and utilization review 2014-2015, you indicated that for example, indicators. I won't go there the other side of half year status, but indicators. You also agreed that you said, you spoke about the issue of on page 44, you spoke about the to start to review and engage the NPA for capacity and utilization of the data. You see, that one, I will marry it with page 46, where you were saying in KPI indicators, also the legislation framework, to be developed. You see? No matter if that target achieved, you see, what is killing me for how long, the things which you're talking about. If you talk about legislation, you talk about processes which must be inside, internal, and then going outside. You said legislation framework to be developed, implemented, and updated annually, whatever, you see, so that it can comply. You talk about compliance, because what is the key fundamental role? It's the issue of compliance, whether you comply or not. You see, that's what is worrying me. And then again, on page 45, I think you wanted to come with something, I don't remember. You see, there's this thing which is worrying me about the ownership, which Bu touched, because there's a thing which is worrying me seriously. So, bulletin number 1, 2, 3, 4. If you talk bulletin 4 and last bulletin, you said in bulletin 4, South African free on board is FOB, exports and cost insurance and freight, imports predominant in concluding international trade contracts, ensuring that bulk, Shepherd, this one is worrying me, ensuring that bulk of the port's charges liability lies with the South African party. See, what is worrying me there? Who owns those ships? Because what is killing us? The issue of the rand and the dollar. That means it can be a contribution factor that some of the people that come and register here in Western Cape or somewhere in Durban, because they know very well that they won't be charged, they will be covered. You see, so that one is worrying me, that in our offshores, some people come and work, but we don't charge them. Look, free. Because it covers the question which was raised earlier on, that be specific, which are those rules or laws or legislations which we must assist you to help the South Africans. I'll repeat, to help South Africans. Because some people, they are taking us just for granted that everything, you see. Shepherd, I'm not taking you back. Do you still remember when we were dealing about the REC law, whatever, that report and the like? That was correct, because we wanted to protect our things first. Charity begins where? At home. To me, there is a question mark on that one. And then also, you see, on page 43 and 44, there was a place where you talk about the issue of SARS, that you bank on SARS data. Is the systems talking to each other? Because to me, you referred that thing that at least you depended on, to me, as the way you put it down, you depended from the information from SARS. What about yours? Because we spend billions of money to pay those researchers and everything to do 1, 2, 3. Is your system able to speak to each other? If there is any, if there is none, I don't know. And the last one, on page 41, from your own report. On page 41, I'll ask you a simple question. Do you have a risk management? Because here, on your KPI indicators, you spoke about effective risk management. Do you have one? And who constitutes it? That is the key fundamental thing. Because sometimes ourselves, let's say from my part, you'll see that we're not informing the leadership the way we're supposed to be. Because we'll say everything is fine, the only time I'm going to realize that, that's when there will be crisis. If you can take me on board, then I'll leave maybe for the second round to come again. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I would like to apologize formally for arriving late, Chairperson. I don't want to give reasons like I'm justifying such. So thanks for the presentation. I just want to ask clarity on page 52 about the challenges you mentioned, about three of them. When the first one you were talking about the funding, like the, it's like you are failing even to achieve some target in terms of APP, more especially the evaluation project. I just want to know whether the department is it aware that you are failing to achieve some of the APPs because of lack of funding, or even the department, maybe Mr. Dibakwan, maybe can also respond on such. The other thing is about the Single Transport Economic Regulator. You are saying that we must look it very carefully. Too general, careful what? What is the problem with this Single Transport Economic Regulator? Tell us, don't be too general. Tell us what is the challenge we need to be geared this word carefully by legislation. The last one is about the, you said the regulator requires a greater enforcement capacity. And I'm not clear whether the capacity is about the human resource or resources or legislation, but you said this is a proposed amendment which may soon cease before this legislation. When is soon? It's too general also. Tell us with this financial year or which financial year are you going to move this? Because in one of your slides you said the act is like is most of the provision are outdated, and you are talking about soon amendments. I want to know specifically when is this soon?
No, Honorable Chair, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to ask this question. I, while I'm a bit embarrassed, I would ask just two questions. The first question, I just want to find out from the port regulator. In terms of your assessment, do you think you're in compliance with the Act itself? You function within that Act of 2005-11? If not, what are the attempts that you are embarking upon to correct the breach if there are any breaches? The second one is in relation to what you have stipulated as a reason, and I speak on your performance indicators, including the financial aspect of it, that you needed additional resource, additional help here and there, and if you were to get it, it will be self-generating income in the region of 28 million. That's the figure you mentioned. Are you as presenting to the committee that the reason that you are not meeting some of your targets is a direct relationship with the shortage of funds or lack of a full complement capacity of the department. So then the, of course, it will be what is it that you also did in terms of trying to address this particular aspect. So those are the two questions I want to ask you. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will just basically go in the order of questions, if that's okay with you. The first one regarded the study that we had done. The study tries as far as possible to use, to compare apples with apples, but you'll never necessarily find every single court responding in the same way on the request that we make. Language becomes a barrier, etc., when you're dealing with different courts. So our people try as far as possible to include as many courts as possible in the area that that we deal with. But you'll find that the methodology in the study itself, when you go to it on the website, it tries to standardize the ship size, etc., etc., and standardize a unit, whether the unit is a container or breakbulk unit, etc. So what they've done as far as possible is to standardize. But you are right that sometimes you'll find an additional port here and there which gave us information on some things and other ports which might not have. So it is not necessarily the same port in every aspect of the study, because some might not do transshipments, others that you find that may do transshipments, etc. So, but as far as the vessel itself, the vessel is standardized, the units are standardized. In the absence of this, and say we didn't do these studies, we would have no idea how we're comparing to the globe. So this is part of trying to get there, to compare ourselves as a country to other countries. The comparison will not necessarily be perfect, because the point of comparing apples with apples is that every apple is different. And to be able to find, for example, a similar port similar port company that is owned by the state under another company with not perfect, but at least it is an attempt to try and get a sense of how we compare in this whole global system. So forgive us if it is not perfect, but we are trying our best. It's the first two times it's been done. Certainly we will appreciate any advice in trying to get it perfect, better than what we have at the moment. Nobody else in this country has done this kind of study. The next one, the affordability to port users, the fact that we are losing business to Maputo, etc., and the issues of cross-subsidization, why we are so expensive is because of our inefficiency and what's our relationship and our ability to talk to the National Ports Authority to influence them in this regard. I think that is a correct assessment. It is something that it is part of our ambit to look at. But this is why we say, okay, we were putting all of these things on the table to say there is a lot of work that we need to do. The efficiency and the cross-subsidization in the system is part of what we will progressively be looking at. The revenue required methodology is what we have at the moment. So our methodology looks at the overall revenue requirement, looks at the overall, therefore from there, work out the tariffs that would be required from an overall revenue requirement. You are right that what we are starting to do is to look at efficiency within the port system, and this is why we have these items which other members have come up with, looking at the benchmarking of the port system itself. We are working with the NPA, and they're part of their TOPS data is terminal operator efficiency. We are using this data then to say what should an efficient piece of infrastructure, be it a key wall, stacking area, etc., in each of the ports, what should it be producing? What should the charge be? That's part of the tariff strategy process, and this is why it is a little bit difficult, and it is taking us some time. We would be including as well as we go along, and each year you regulate, you come up with new ideas, and what we're looking at now is efficiency and how we should either reward it or penalize inefficiency. Because the part of the revenue required methodology also has what we'd call the return on regulatory asset base. Now, if your asset base becomes bigger, your return becomes bigger. So this is one of the things in regulation that we have to look at. We are therefore incentivizing building more assets rather than making them more efficient. So part of this is we'll be looking at in the tariff strategy and going forward as the regulator is how we introduce efficiency rewards within the system so that we actually become more efficient and we can move more containers, etc. But remember that within this act, the regulator doesn't regulate TPT. We don't regulate the operations. We regulate the infrastructure owner, the landlord, and its operations, which is port services like pilotage, etc. So the STIR itself, so from the department's side, and I shouldn't be speaking on behalf of the department, the single transport economic regulator will look more than what we have now as a port regulator. And hopefully it will include regulating port operations. But of course the department can say more about that. It is not. I mean, we report to the department in terms of our operations, etc. This is why I want to just quickly look at the issues about all acts, proposed amendments to acts, etc. Is all of these things are submitted to the department. It is not us that can say, give us this. The same goes for board members. We have to submit to the department a proposal. So if I want more board members, I can't just go and get board members. It's not done that way. So all of these things go to the department, and the minister and the department that is in charge of those sorts of things. Okay, let me then go to the third one. So we appreciate as well that, you know, you recognize and appreciate our report. The governance of cargo owners and looking at previously disadvantaged individuals, that is part of our legal program at the moment. The compliance, and we have started, like I said in my report, with Durban and Richards Bay looking at triple BEE compliance. And part of that is then therefore looking at historically disadvantaged individuals. The other part of it is when complaints come through on access, on equity of access, etc. So the regulator holds therefore any complaint against the NPA, decisions that they have made in issuing tenders, etc., can come to us. Tribunal hearings also look at appeals against their decisions. So it provides, it facilitates this movement towards equity of access in that way. So there's two ways. It's looking at the existing contracts that they have and seeing that they comply in terms of triple BE requirements, and then acting as a vehicle through which complaints on access can come through. Okay. Okay, I think you also asked on what kind of regulations must the committee assist to give us more teeth. You know, I, like you, I have started in May in this organization. So my predecessors have said that they have issued or sent these regulations to the department, which then must then, through its processes, come through Parliament. So what they have been looking for is a little bit more teeth in terms of being able to fine NPA and others. So the ability to fine, et cetera, is not there in this act. So that is the kind of teeth that they were looking for. I think you asked a question for the CFO, the organogram. How will adding board members? Okay, so remember this one is not a board in the traditional sense. It is not just a governing board. It is an operational board, but the word board is not used in the Act. So if you see the two entities named in the Act are the National Ports Authority and the Ports Regulator. One has a board. The board appoints the CEO, etc. The Ports Regulator is not written as a board. It is written as the regulator. So it is members of the regulator. The minister appoints the CEO. The CEO is the accounting officer in this case. This is why I'm here accounting to you, and there is no board. It is a regulator and the members of the regulator. It is my job to, as accounting officer, to account to you directly. It is different from other boards. Those are just governance boards. This is a board that actually... I'm saying board in inverted commas. It's not a board. It is the regulator. It presides over tribunals. It, you know, takes matters of complaints and appeals on NPA decisions. And so it has a wider than a traditionally governance board. So the Act is deliberately written in a different way. One says board, one says regulator.
I just want you to hold it right there. I'm sure members are very clear now as to what this is all about in terms of the NPA has a board and they are a regulator. Maybe a question that would I would expect you to ask is, he has already explained that the regulator, members of this inverted comma board, gets appointed by the minister. They are operational also at the same time as they do that. So it means you need to have a particular qualification which is in line with what is happening in the port's regulatory system. And I think earlier on he spoke to the fact that they are interacting with universities so that they can have legal expertise which actually can be able to be aligned to what they are doing in this instance. So I just wanted, as we'll be talking going forward, members will be having an understanding that we are dealing with can be able to assist us to have an understanding of what we're dealing with here. Thank you very much.
Ma'am, if I may continue. Okay, so I think the question was around, will adding more board members increase productivity in the sense? So we're saying that, okay, yes, we are a small number of secretariat members. Certainly adding more secretariat members would be important, and of course that is budget dependent. But adding more board members, regulator members, will increase the throughput in dealing with complaints and tribunal matters against the NPA, because we need three members to be sitting to hear tribunal. So every time there is a complaint, an appeal, whether it is dealing with previously disadvantaged individuals not getting access or any other complaint on discount, unfairness in pricing, etc., you need three members each time. Now, if we sort of started with nine and we are left with six, it means that they can't hear as many cases as required. So remember then, this is a regulatory board which is operational in some sense, and therefore their productivity leads to the productivity of the whole organization as well in terms of the legal aspect, not the economic regulation part. Okay, so I hope that one answers this one. So the next one, ma'am, thank you for welcoming our presentation. Okay, so I think this, why no board member? I think I've addressed this already. I am a board member, as it were, but it's a different kind of board. And in this particular one, I am the person that is here and supposed to account in terms of the act. I would have liked to have brought so-called board members, but our chairman is overseas and other members were not able to make it. Slide 11, the industry development program, you said the participation of women, why no youth? I think thus far we've, in the progress of this organization, we've been able to address, starting to address BBBE compliance. So remember, it's fairly new. I am fairly new. We have now just started on the BBBE part. So we haven't actually even started on the woman part. But it is a progressive thing that as we go along, we will address more and more issues that become state policy that says we need to address these things. Page 40, you said discretionary procurement. Is there transparency in this?
Thanks, Mahesh. On that matter there, as I did explain on the video when we had the annual presentation, yes, we do ensure that all our procurement process is subject to transparency, fairness, etc., which is why for the past 2 years we had no issues of fruitless, regular, or waste expenditure. And also we ensure that we maintain a database of service providers where we try to reach as much objects as possible when we need to source the goods and services. And obviously, with the AG, where they actually do look, when doing the audit, when they do look at so, I mean, for the consequence, there's no point in being consequence, but we buy an item that should not be in relation to our core business. So we do make sure that we promote especially that is in line with our plan for the year, so that we won't attract any attention when the AG comes to the installment of the audit. And yes, we do also need the service providers, because in terms of database, if we need to use, for example, a lawyer, if we, for example, we have 10, we won't always go to the same provider. We will still make sure all the providers are aware of the service needed, therefore allow the process in terms of the whole supply chain to make sure that we appoint that supplier that does satisfy our needs, just to make sure that that is best.
I think the next one, Honorable Sibande, I think we must thank you for acknowledging the presentation. I think you echoed the sentiment on board members, which I've explained now. So currently there's 6 members. It does reduce our capacity in terms of the tribunals. The issue of consultants, we don't actually use a lot of consultants. We don't replace consultants with board members, etc. And so it's a very small organization. It's not in the billions, it's in the millions. Relationship with provinces, this is set up in terms of national legislation. It looks centrally at a national entity and regulates the national entity. So while we would have, we would not object to any sort of relationship to provinces, but there isn't a provincial competence in the work that we do. Competition, I think, the Act is very clear that we must promote regulated competition, but of course the competition doesn't come from us as such. It comes from the state's own policy on competition. If the state wants to, for example, concession out a particular terminal, etc., it's not part of our work to do that. It is part of the National Ports Authority's work. It's part of the department's work, Department of Transport as well as Public Enterprise, to craft the policy on these sorts of things. This is not part of the work that we do, although we must support it when it does come. Who determines tariffs, whether it's the regulator or the NPA? I think I did set out the process. The NPA applies for us, to us as the regulator for a tariff increase. We can either reject or change the tariff that they need based on the calculations we do, as well as our consultations through the roadshows that we've held in September. So it is the regulator that determines the National Port Authority tariffs. We don't determine TPT tariffs, Transnet tariffs, only the National Ports Authority, and this is completely in line with the Act, which has now, of course, been is the law of the country. Port capacity and utilization review and this issue of FOB and CIF, it is worrying us as well, this issue that South Africa loses our port ways. This is why we raise these things in platforms like this and put it into the presentation. As a regulator, it is not us that have to do something about it. We raise this so that it is the policymakers then that can look at this, the legislators that can legislate, but from the knowledge about what is happening there. And so part of our work is to make this knowledge available on what we are seeing, what we are observing as trends. This is why you see many, many graphs, etc., so that both the policymakers as well as the final legislators will then be able to see what it is that we are identifying. SARS data, the issue of SARS data, yes, we don't have a huge system of data. Remember, this is a very new organization, only legislated in 2005. It does not deal directly. It basically uses data to make decisions. Our products are decisions. Our products are information. So we take information because we have to look at the integrity of data that, for example, NPA has and compare what SARS has so that we can look at whether there are discrepancies. So remember, ours is the regulator's role. We must go and see where something is wrong and allow it to be right. So we look at the data of different people and see whether in fact in the administrative system as a whole, whether there is integrity in the system. Issue of risk management, do we have one? We have developed the risk register in the last 2 months. We are now taking that risk register and developing a risk strategy around that. And so we will have one. We don't have one yet. So we will be, of course, we will be audited on the different risks of the organization. I think the CFO can say something about it.
Thanks, Ash. Just to add on the risk management, what's currently happening is whenever we have monthly management meetings,
we have now upgraded for now the second item on the meeting where we will discuss case management to ensure it come the end of financial year. We can be able to chase and monitor our risk management strategy, because the old committee requires that there is no project has performed risk management once, prepare register and put it there. So we need to make sure that at every monthly basis, when we have the regular meetings, we can then be able to see what we're doing in terms of progress. And also, the management forms part of the operational risk management committee, where we will then, again, tackle all the risk issues and enforce on those when we have the meetings with the regular committee. So just to keep in touch, the internal risk management at the port, we do take it seriously to make sure that all the risks identified, both operational and strategic, are reducing to an acceptable level. Thank you.
Okay, the next one, it was Honorable Malazzi, on the challenges. So the challenges and, you know, this spelling on the evaluation project in terms of the APP, and we said that we will not be able to make it, and whether the department is aware of that. We have made the minister aware directly in the annual general meeting that we had with her. If the issue was raised there as a challenge, so we have made the department and directly to the minister. As I said in my presentation, that the minister has asked for a meeting for us in November. It hasn't been set at this point in time, the date, but she has asked for a meeting to look at the regulator as a whole and look at its funding challenges, and so we look forward to that one. On the STIR itself, we said the transitional arrangements need to be looked at carefully by legislators, because once the STIR bill comes to you, we don't want to create a vacuum. It is something where we want the transition into the STIR to be smooth, so that nothing is left unregulated for a year, for example, etc. So it is just saying, keep an eye on the transitional arrangements, please, on our behalf, because we don't wish in that year then all the post prices to be pushed up because we didn't exist legislatively while this one was being passed. Okay, and the greater enforcement capacity, I think we spoke to that already. The issue of fines, etc., will give us a little bit more teeth for enforcement capacity. This has been put in front of the DOT already, and it will come through them. We don't really have the power to take over these acts through your process or the bills. Okay, the next one, Honorable Matakana, I think in terms of our assessment, do we think we are in compliance with the Act itself? I think largely we comply with the Act. I don't think if we look at the two organizations envisaged in the Act, I think the Department of Transport has done its job to actually give effect to the ports regulator. My predecessors in this post have done their utmost to build this organization from zero to at least the 17 people we have now to give effect to the Act itself. In terms of our internal compliance, we have achieved unqualified audit with zero emphasis of matter, MRI CFO, no emphasis of matter. So we have complied as an organization here and there. It's not a, there may be issues, but largely we have complied with the Act. I think your next item was in terms of the not achieving the APP, this issue of self-guaranteed income. It is something that we have put in front of the minister as well. And so she, in the AGM, and this is the meeting that we are going to have. So essentially we're saying that for a regulator to remain at arm's length with government, because that is what it's supposed to be, if it is fully fiscal funded, then, you know, there's always suspicion by industry out there that, okay, the government is paying you and you will only do what government wants. So it's about creating the right balance then. So we are asking within the funding proposal that a component of the funding at least must come, be paid by, you know, every tariff on every container, etc., etc. And it will amount to a very small percentage increase of about 0.3% to take us to about 25 million rands. So either it can be fully funded by the port users themselves through the tariff, or it can be partially fiscus, partially tariffs. But you don't want a situation as well where the regulator is captured completely by by the industry. And so this balance is a very important one, and this is why our funding proposal then looks at that. So it is before the department and minister will and before the minister as well. Madam Chair, the assets, the clarification on the assets of the NPA in regards to the valuation project. Okay, so the revenue required methodology that we're using, there are many methodologies for regulation, but the one that we use at the moment has a return on the regulatory asset base. It was one of those graphs I showed you with a squiggly line that says how we brought down the return on the asset base. So the organization has assets. It must earn a return on the assets. If they value the assets extremely high or they inflate the value of the assets, then we are obliged in terms of the formula. So all of this regulation is formula-driven, the economic regulation. The formulae come from economics. We have put the tariff manual on our website, and you can actually see the different formulae. I could have presented some of it, but then this would have become too technical. But essentially, the profit of the entity is a return, a percentage return on their asset base, on the value of the asset base. So if they give a very high value for their asset base in their books, we of course have to take it from their audited financial statements. Then the people out there paying for goods and services on the ports will be paying a very high component for the profit. So that means as a country we become less and less competitive with other countries because we're paying our own entity a high profit. So the whole point was of the valuation project was to look at different valuation methodologies, take a sample of the assets initially. This was still just a sample of 10, and there are hundreds and hundreds of assets, and value them and see whether, in fact, what the accounting value is in terms of the books is the correct value. So if it's too high, that means we're paying out too much of profits and port users are paying out too much profits. If it is too low, then we are giving them the incorrect profit. So the valuation project was for that. And I think I've explained it. The issue of Transnet then, because Transnet owns the NPA as a division, it then has the opportunity to take some of these profits, a lot of them in many cases, off the NPA and put it in as part of their profit. I don't know whether we should get into that, but I think, essentially we are regulating the NPA. The NPA belongs to another company, and of course they have the opportunity to take the profits of the NPA rather than allow the NPA to invest it back into the port. If the NPA was able to invest it back into the port system, then it will result in lower charges. So essentially from where we sit as a regulator, this becomes a problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the members and also to our post-regulator for the inputs. and the comments on the subject matter. Perhaps, Chair, the starting point for us is to welcome the suggestion that of the committee of wanting to meet with the Committee on Public Enterprises, because we believe that we need to have a legislation regime, a framework that begins to respond to the National Development Plan, that begins to respond to Operation Pakisa and also the new growth path and also other current legislative and policy mechanisms that the state is trying to put in place. So we really welcome that, Chairperson. It's a good sign to us that our legislators finally want to assist us in moving this country and our people forward. Chairperson, perhaps on the issue of the support to the post regulator, just to reiterate the point made earlier on, to say the minister has noted a need to have sustainable funding for the post regulator. As a result of the department, we have received proposal for that matter, which has a number of options that we're looking into, which ultimately will make sure that we have a regulator which is efficient and is able to deliver on its mandate. So we are looking into that, and we also have a forum called the DGCOs Forum, where in the DG over time engages with the CEOs of the various entities. And we have a process in place currently which, as the Office of the DG, we're looking into to engage the various CEOs and entities around matters that we see coming out from the various Kotala reports that we receive. And I should also indicate that as part of our organogram as a department, we now have dedicated focus. We have dedicated capacity of officials looking into the various entities, not like in the old scenario wherein we had a proliferation of all entities and oversight to the entities was a bit of a challenge. So we now have dedicated officials looking into rail, looking into maritime, looking into road entities. So it is our view that such oversight as the shareholder needs to happen so that we have entities that are able to respond to what we expect of them as their shareholder. I think on the issue of the Single Transport Economic Regulator, perhaps just to maybe take it a bit further, that this process is currently with the cabinet clusters. We're making engagement and presentations around the Single Transport Economic Regulator. And of course, we also are of the view which has been shared by the CEO that in us going to this desired state of affairs of having a single approach on economic regulation and transport, we need to, of course, to have those change management mechanisms that will see to it that we do not have a system that will collapse in the middle of us enacting this new legislative framework. And we see this as a way that will bring a certainty to the sector around transport pricing, around economic regulation as a whole, because we believe that we also need to have a situation where our economic regulation responds to the broader development objectives that our country is trying to achieve. I think with that, Chairperson, those were our comments. I do not want to really repeat what has been echoed upon, also laid upon by the post regulator, because I think over and above we agree on the approach and also on what the sentiments are of what needs to become of this of the post regulator and the sector as a whole. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, honourable members. Are there follow up questions? It's going. Okay, honourable Ramatlakan.
Maybe just a small follow up, Chair. The response insofar as the adherence to the Act I hear the response as saying, we do. The but was very small but, which did not quite explain anything. Because, Chair, you have mentioned this thing about the possibility of engagement with public enterprise, would have been useful to hear from, and I know the department is willing for that process, for that conversation, would have been useful to hear whether the Chapter 2 of the Act for A is in compliance. Would have been useful to hear whether Chapter 27, 1, A, B, and C is in compliance. And so I can go on. But I'm just pointing just two sections in the Act, so that if we engage with the public enterprise, we clear from the court authority, we don't do the thumbs up when we engage with them. I'll leave it there, Chair, but if the presenter feels comfortable that there is a full compliance with that, I'm not going to pursue the matter. So that I just wanted to make sure that I'm in that same page with the authority on that.
Thank you. Sorry, Chairperson, just a comment. Chairperson, I'm also in sharing the same view which was raised by my colleague, because the key fundamental is compliance. As you already indicated that, for example, on page 12, legal program, compliance projects, you spoke about compliance projects, that you need to review Section 56 agreements and licenses, review lease agreements, review BEE, triple BEE, compliance with MPA. Okay. As I indicated my earlier question, you see, what I propose, Chairperson, maybe not now, I'll be very much grateful if you can maybe second some of the legislatures and some of the things which you really wanted us to speed up in terms of which will contribute to give you more power to meet your targets. Because another contribution factor, if you don't have some laws which are inclined to compliance, it's very difficult to reach some of the targets. But maybe not now. If you can assist us, list them, and then so that it can form part of our package when we meet with the other counter partners and check that who's responsible exactly in that particular section. Thank you, Chairman.
Chair, we're raising a hand precisely to perhaps wanting to talk on the issue that Honorable Swan is talking to now. Perhaps what we'll probably need to do the department and the regulator is to provide you with a submission assist the committee in its further engagement with the other committee on what we believe are the priority areas and also what we need to look into or what the committee might want to assist us with. I think that it can be provided. Perhaps the chairperson can then assist us to say at what point do they need this piece of submission so that we're able to have it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CEO.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I misunderstood the question from Honorable Ramachan. I thought he was asking whether we as a court regulator are in compliance with the Act. So I'm sorry for the misunderstanding. But in terms of whether the Act has been complied with by all parties, I think you're right that of the two institutions in the judiciary in the Act, the fourth regulator part has been implemented, but Chapter 2, which you mentioned, deals with the incorporation of the National Ports Authority, has not been actually given effect. Whilst there are no timelines set out in the Act itself as to when it is supposed to happen, we think that, you know, something has passed in 2005, which is many years now. We are now in 2014. 9 years later, it wouldn't be, you know, something as a new year coming in should not point out. That it is, you know, it is something that I have now pointed out to yourself, or you have asked about it, that will affect the part of the Act has not been complied with. It will lead, or could lead to legal problems as well, for the UK itself, for the state itself. And so it is something that must be addressed. And so I think I would agree with the department that submission on this because that assisting assisting perhaps the Minister of Public Enterprise or the Department in complying with the Act.
Thank you very much, Police. I think people can have a good 48 hours to make a submission.
Okay, I suppose you, the committee will want a bit of analysis and a certain level of articulation there. If that's, I think, 5 days, I think that should be fine for us.
No, I was just checking, that is why I'm saying maybe a minimum of 48 hours. For sure you already, because you're working on the matter, there is some bit of work that has been done, and therefore it's just to implement it in such a way that it will be acceptable to the committee, will be understood by members of the committee. Fine, we'll give you 5 days for us to be able to receive the documents, and we'll take it up from there. Honorable Hadere.
Chair, I'll suggest that we give them 4 days so that they can get it the day before the portfolio committee sitting.
Yes. At least, thank you very much, Honorable Hadere. Definitely, it will also assist that we go and have it as our weekend snack for the weekend if we will be going over the weekend. So, thank you very much, Honorable Members. I think work has been done. It will be very important that we, like I said earlier on, what becomes now to pass is for us to tease out and the relationship between MCA and the regulator. And as we are doing that, then we are able to bring on board our sister portfolio committee so that we are able to take it to a higher level, which will be able to assist all the role players in this institution to function properly. But what is very, very important is for us to make sure that because this is one of the areas which actually is a national focus, things have to be done in a way that everybody can be able to see that once policy is pronounced by the president, we all adhere to that policy. And we will be running to just make sure that the policy as pronounced is complied with. The adherence in this instance will be able to come out, and that will be able to come to the fore as we're doing our work. Honorable members, I think we have done our due for today. We will release the court regulator and continue with our meeting to go into the meeting of the previous, the minutes of the previous meeting for adoption. Thank you.